Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's The Breakdown, Jamali Maddox with The Hook. I'm in Edinburgh. I've been here for about 3 weeks now, and I haven't been able to get a haircut, so I'm looking rough as fuck. That's fine. Show's going okay. I'm enjoying it. Getting it ready for tour, because the tour dates are on the website, by the way. So check it out. Go to jamalimaddox.com. And I'm doing tours of England, Europe, America. Blah, 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 blah. And today on the podcast, I've got Ian Sterling. And we're recording it in a lovely house in a secret location in Edinburgh, where a lovely lady lets use her house. And it's a gorgeous house. And yeah, I'm with Ian Sterling, man. And you know, man, I've known Ian for a little while, man. I think I've known Ian now for a couple of years. And you know, I've gigged with him, I've worked with him, and we've done like some old, you know, TV trailer stuff together. And the conversation's good, man. I actually really enjoyed talking to him. It was nice catching up with him, you know, and we sort of talked about the change, you know, and sort of talking about, you know, what he's up to and sort of like this sort of thing now where he's the voice of Love Island and now actually becoming sort of known who he is and not just a voice anymore and just there's a face to it. How people sort of buying into that, and it's, you know, it's really interesting, man. It's interesting, and he's a real cool guy. He's real humble. He's very, you know, I say, oh, actually, humble probably isn't the best. He's a very confident man, but he's a very cool guy, man. He's a nice dude, and he's got interesting stuff to say. Very, very smart too. He's got some interesting ideas on the social media and stuff. So, yeah, man, we're going to talk to him, and you can, and do you know, he's got a new book out about millennials. So go buy that and support him. Because I'm gonna read it, and normally I'm the type of guy who go, yeah, I'm gonna read it, and I don't, but I actually will read it because he's a good dude and he deserves support. So go watch him if he's coming to a town near you. I don't think he's touring, but when he does tour, make sure you go see him. He's funny, you know. He's got the Jamali stamp of approval of he has made me laugh on many occasions. So yeah, it's only a quick intro this time. Normally I waffle on and I start talking about what's been going on in my week, but I'm missing Edinburgh and it's, you know, I'm ready to go home, and that's about it. But yeah, that's it. So check out the podcast, man. You know, this is The Breakdown with The Hook. And this is Jamali Maddox having a conversation and a catch-up with my good friend Ian Sterling. Hope you enjoy.
Jamali 9000.
Get the hat on.
Mate, do you know what? I haven't been able to get a haircut for the whole fringe. There's nowhere for me to get a haircut.
Do you still hat it at every gig?
Yeah, no, I take it off now.
What? Because do you know, I started with Tom Deacon. Do you know Tom?
Yeah, yes.
He won like the Chortle competition.
Yeah.
And he used to wear like one of the, remember when like the flat?
Oh, the new era caps.
The new era cap.
When you have to get it like the size of your head.
Yeah,
and it was like a 3.4 and stuff.
Yeah, and everyone kept the label, or all the sort of like, well, white guys just kept all the fucking labels and shit on it.
Yeah,
and
you stole that from us.
And then he used to wear hats, and then like became known as like the hat guy.
The hat guy.
He's like the hat guy.
Yeah.
He had to sack that shit off.
Well, it's a weird thing. You can become the guy of something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're the Hawaiian shirt guy, or you're the hat guy.
And you were the hat guy. You were the hat guy.
Was that the hat guy?
Well, I mean, more the beard
guy. I'm the beard guy. I think I'm the beard guy. I take the beard and glasses guy.
I mean, the thing is, what's really cool about the beard thing, though, you could, like, just completely change what comedy you do.
Yeah.
bash off the beard, and then it's like, that's like a fucking, that's a statement now.
Do you hear the difference with how we are differently? My idea is that I could rob a bank and then cut my beard off and get away with it. You're talking about it artistically. I'm like, yeah, but I could rob some shit.
I would wait till you went into prison and still keep the beard and then escape from prison, then whap the beard.
But I feel like the beard in prison is, not to bit you, but I think like that would be my character in prison, is I'd have a beard, a Muslim hat, and when people come inside, they'll be like, I'm angry. I'm like, no, man, the prison's in your mind. I'm back. And I work at the library and shit. You know what I'm
saying? That's like, amazing. You start like your own religion.
Yeah. No, I would read a lot of Malcolm X novels. But yeah, man, how you been, bruv? I haven't even seen you for too long.
It's been mad, innit?
The last time I saw you were Top Secret, Comedy Club, maybe.
I don't even think I was on. I think I just came up.
Yes.
And I ended up going on for a bit. Yeah, I was there to see Paul Sweeney.
Okay, yeah.
And you were on,
yeah.
Man. Fucking great. Him. It's so weird being out of the clubs.
Yeah.
And I've not been in a club for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
And the climate has changed.
Do you know what? I haven't been in the club now for, I think, I mean, I'll pop down Top Secret, but actually been on the circuit for maybe about 8 months now. About 8 months. And you feel out of touch.
Honestly,
I don't know what's like, because someone be like, oh, have you seen this person? I'm like, nah, like, and it's not, and I feel like I'm quite, you know, in the know.
Yeah, I knew when I knew when I become like a sort of like old guard was, and she's a really good friend now.
Yeah.
But I was talking to some comedians and they were like, you ever heard of Jade Adams? I was like, who's Jade Adams? Like, she got nominated for Best Newcomer and she's been on 8 out of 10 Cats. And I was like, fuck, when I was a comic, I used to watch 8 out of 10 Cats every fucking week and Google the shit out of those pricks. They were taking my work, man. But like, I had no idea. I'm good friends with her now, but yeah, but like even things like with all the changes in society and that are going on, I'm like, how, I wouldn't even know how, I'm almost having to start again, like, what am I going to talk about?
Yeah.
Especially being like a white straight male, like, how do I approach this shit? Because I don't, you know what I mean, I've just not done it yet. I don't know the vibes, I don't know.
Well, because I guess the tone always changes, and there is, and it's not to make it sound diminished, sort of the struggles that people are talking about, but there is a sort of, not fad, but tones change, and it's sort of the arc of what people and how people talk about things. You know, you can't get away with things you said 5 years ago.
No, there's you know? So much stand-up that every stand-up's done that would get them in a lot of bother five years ago.
Oh, mate, there's bits I've watched the old YouTube, because I was doing that ACMS gig the other night where it's like that alternative, and I'm like, I can't do that whole stuff. Like, my hands are cheese. Like, I, you know what I'm saying?
I laughed.
A little part of me was like, I just went up there, I was like, what are you weird white people doing at 12 o'clock at night? What the fuck?
That
is doing?
True. It is.
That is
a new white privilege.
Yeah.
Fucking
doing
wearing
weird
a,
shit.
Wearing a fucking mask to do stuff.
But the thing is, if I say that stuff, I just look like I'm escaping responsibility.
Yeah.
People like, get your act together, you got real shit to worry about. But you know, but it's like a little part, I don't do it anymore because I ain't got the time, but like, I used to go to the open mic, because I think when you go to the open mic and you see the new people, you see what the trend is.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when I was coming up in open mic, the trend was so I fucked the kid. That was like the punchline.
People think I'm
crazy for saying that. Look, but
no,
the people
honestly,
hit it, but that was
it's
the punchline.
Horrific. When I went to an open mic night, there was 11 Frankie Boyles, or even worse, 11 people thinking they knew what Frankie Boyle did, and that was it.
Well, what it was is people didn't realise is that Frankie Boyle, Doug Stanhope, them guys who are like, you know, masters of that dark art shit, is they're like, they're making sushi. They're making, you know, that puffer fish where it's poisonous and you cut it wrong and it's death.
Yeah.
But they're doing it with a knife, and these guys are doing it with a fucking axe.
Yeah, I know.
And they're just... I used to always say
when I'd done new material, it was an old FIFA, like FIFA 14, when you took a penalty, the little guide would go left to right. And it was like red on one side, red on like a green sweet spot.
Yeah.
And I always found it was basically like offensive, not funny, and then just right.
You'd always be fucking going on this.
But honestly, when I first started comedy, I don't think...
How long have you been going now?
This will be...
Because you're longer than me.
Yeah, I'm like 9 years.
Yeah, you're way longer.
Oh, yeah.
But, so you started in Edinburgh. And
yeah, so
what's it, 9 years ago? Okay, so it, comedy was it was in the it was coming up to the boom, I'm guessing.
It was starting, man.
Yeah, the boom started. You must have been in the nice in the boom. I sort of hit the sort of the end curvature of the boom.
I was lucky. I was in when everyone wanted a white guy with a haircut and a round neck t-shirt.
So we're talking about like Russell Kane was big.
It's when Russell Howard is around the time Howard had just become like a regular on Mock of the Week.
And okay. People lost their mind. He went electric, man.
It was insane. Yeah. I went to see the Pleasance, the Cabaret Bar. It's like 150 seat, a little room. And obviously you book these tours in like a year in advance.
So he sold out the whole
courtyard. Outside, there's like 300 people outside trying to get in. There was people holding like signs up to the window, like, can I get in? Like doing like funny, like hangman, like pictures being like, because they wouldn't let him in, like joking. It was mad.
Wow.
It was mad. And he just hit. And then, yeah, everyone sort of was doing that. And when I started, there was basically folk like me doing that what I thought was Russell Howard, like, oh, I had a party on Facebook and only one person accepted my friend request. It was my mum. There was those people. And then Frankie Boyles. And that was it. And we were all butchering it. But that was it.
Why did you pick that? Why did you pick to go that style? Is it because in terms of... Because it's that weird, isn't it? Because I was talking about another comedy the other day and I was about the style you pick. And he goes, well, it's not the style you pick, it's what picks you.
Yeah,
I know we sound, and then people listening, it's like you sound like pretentious cunts. Well, guess what? We're gonna nerd out on some comedy. So you don't like it, fucking lock off. But please subscribe. But I need the money. I spent all my money on Wu-Tang nunchucks. So what made you go towards more, say, of doing the Russell Howard type stuff? Because the thing is, and it's not a disrespect, because when you first start doing comedy, you sort of. You know, imitation is the best form of flattery, and you just try and do what you've seen. I tried to be Bill Hicks, and it did not work. I was not intelligent enough, nor did I have any points to make. But you know, it's that thing of what made you lean more towards Russell? Because you've got an eclectic taste of comedy.
Oh man, growing up, I was into Fred Ruffo, wasn't it? So I like watched everything.
Because it's strange, I remember when me and you first met. And me and you styles are very different. You know, and it's that weird thing of, you know, people outside of comedy would think it's strange that me and you enjoy each other's comedy.
Yeah,
because
totally.
It's so different.
And I think as a comedian, you know? There's always a bit in your head that goes, there's no way someone like that would like what I do.
Yeah.
There's always that
worry.
Yeah,
I feel that, because you think, you know, I'm doing this type of stuff and he does that type of stuff.
Mm.
But then I guess it's just that thing of, you know, you're just a lover of comedy. It's not a lover of a particular style of comedy.
No, I just love it all. I think with the Russell Howard thing, I think it was definitely just like... you see yourself in
someone.
So
how old are you?
Well, when I started, I was like 19, 20.
Okay.
He must be, so he's probably like mid to late 20s. He probably went well in his 30s now, I reckon.
Yeah. I saw him the other day. He looked good,
though. He looks baby-faced, man.
He's been working out.
He is ripped, man. I
had a brief conversation with him, and he's biceps. I was like, bro, you working out, fam?
What's your take on comedians that are ripped?
Do you know what? I think you can get away with it.
Nah, man.
I think you can.
Nah.
Oh, look at me. I'm killing it.
Nah.
No, but I just because this is audio and people don't know, I'm fat shit right now. But like...
I'm so... all
nah,
my shots,
you're fine,
Ian. Get out of the house. Look, this,
good,
look at that. That is disgusting.
You're just living good.
I'm eating that.
I am eating,
honestly.
I remember when we done something together, we did a... this is going to be a catch-up podcast, right? But I remember when we did... do you remember we did that... we did a run through and they filmed it like it was a real panel show. It was me, you, Chris Martin, and Susie Ruffle. It was in London and we had to do this fake panel show and you was the host. And this was you, Slim.
I'd done that insanity thing, like the full run. You ever done that?
No, I know you're talking about the workout.
I don't remember this.
That's why you worked too
Where
much.
Was it?
Well, it was in London and we did it for a production and because they were selling it to America. And we had to do this run, and we had to pretend, and then like they kept on being angry at me because I wouldn't pretend that I wanted to win.
Oh yes, no, I do remember this.
And then they were setting me up, and I kept on saying inappropriate jokes. They were like, "So Jamali, like, what's your family like?" And I was like, "Well, my uncle stabbed a guy once." They were just like, "Can you stop saying?"
And they were like, "This is like HBO tea time, Jamali."
But yeah, man, that was years ago.
Yes, Jamali, Americans do know what the word cunt means and it's not all right.
Yeah, man, that was a long time.
That's
man.
Not these pilots, man. People yeah, don't know how much when you're
it was
new.
The run-throughs.
Yeah, the run-throughs, and the people do not know like when.
You was always the host of them.
I, but mate, do you know the not mate? The host. Do you know if you? But basically, if you host a run-through, all that means is they go right. Well, you're a comedian, but you're not funny enough to be on the panel, so we'll just give you a script to say. Basically, if you're a host of a run-through on a panel show, what they're saying is you know comedians. And you'll do what you're told. Yeah, that's literally all it is. No,
You're the navigation of that ship.
No, but honestly.
I mean, look, 8 out of 10 cats wouldn't be nothing without Jimmy Carr. You know what I'm saying?
8 out of 10 cats, like, I must have done, and I'm not exaggerating.
You've done the show?
I've done
it twice, mate.
I've never heard of you. And but then that, back in the day, man, I don't know what it was like for you. I done a run through. I've probably done 12 run-throughs for 8 out of 10 cats in total.
Okay, no, I've never done that for that show, but I've done a lot of run-throughs. And
eight out of ten cats, they used to do it, like, you do like two in an office.
Yes, I've done the office
then
one.
You do then you'd be like an A band and a B band in the studio with Jimmy. And then they do like a final one to practice to be on the main show. So back in the day when that show was flying.
That was electric. That show was one of the kingmakers, isn't it?
It was mad, wasn't it?
It was like that, Live Your Polo, and Mark of the Week. Without the Kingmakers. I know I said that there, like I cried a little bit. People were just like, is Jumani crying? Is it of his memories of Mock of the Week?
So, still going.
Yeah, man, I've got, anyway.
But then the worst run through I ever done was, and I stopped doing it, and they were like, oh, Joe Lice has got this new show that he's doing. And I thought, oh, Joe's attached, will definitely do it. So me, David Morgan, Lou Sanders, and so, I can't remember, someone else maybe. And we got this tiny office, man. Like, I'm talking like 3x3, like it's tiny. And we're like, cool, what's the run through? We had to like dress up and do like act outs with props and stuff, like it was mad. And then we think the audience are going to come in. What happens is Joe Lysett comes in with his agent. They sit down and it turns out that we're doing the show to him to see if he wants to have the show. And Joe's obviously not been told this is going
to
happen.
That is hilarious. So it's to see if he wants to do the
show.
Yes,
so it's four comedians doing the show at Joe Lysett.
That is amazing.
It was the most, and I'm like in a wig doing like stand up, like Joe and his agent going, cool.
That is hilarious.
It's the stuff the hoops you have to jump through at the beginning, man.
And people don't understand, that's like, it's because, you know, people don't understand it's not just overnight, especially with doing stand up, because stand up takes just the,
you've got to get good.
Grind,
we were saying that, like, everyone's proud of their first show, and if you don't look back on your first show and, like, even 3 years time, I think that's rubbish. You're not working hard enough.
I was looking back on my first show in horror while I was doing my show. I was like, this is techno.
Jumani.
How do you balance comedy now whilst doing this other stuff? Because, I mean, you know, the voice of Love Island.
Yeah. Well, it's a really weird one at the minute with the Love Island thing.
Because that show's just, that's like, it happens so often. Where a show becomes sort of cultural within that time frame. And it's not, I'm not saying it because you're here right now, but there is that weird, that Big Brother did it.
Yeah.
And there's a couple shows that have done it where it's sort of become this cultural thing.
Do you know what?
And Love Island hit it. And it's weird because it's like, you know, it's not a bad show. I've watched the show to support you, but like...
that's why I watch 8 out of 10.
Yeah, thank you. I've watched the show and it is that thing of, it's not a thing that hasn't been done before, but it just works on a different level. And it's like, because there's like little nuances that are smart. Like, you know, one thing I noticed, you don't ever see them cooking.
No, never.
Do you know what I'm saying? You don't ever see, their haircuts are always on point.
That was only this year, they know. Like, series one, series two, series one, series two, there's roots and all shit kicking about. Okay. Yeah, man.
But this one, it's like that thing of like, what they've done is smartly, is they've just streamlined that shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, listen, we ain't got time to be worrying about cooking.
Yeah.
We want the footage.
No, we don't want you cooking a dinner. We want you talking about who you fancy.
Yes,
that idea of relationships are fascinating. And like
And picking great characters.
You've got to have the right people, but man. It's so heavy on that.
They're picking, because I mean, I call it late, but they're picking of who they chose. I mean, they picked good characters.
The people, and there's 38 in total, so you're going to hopefully get enough people by the end. But like, it's even that thing of like, every good bit of television or theatre or film you have to have a relationship in it. Mm. Or it doesn't work, you know? Transformers has got a fucking relationship in it. Mm. Like, you've got to have it.
Yeah.
And what we've done is, we've gone, well, that's the bit everyone likes. So let's just do that the whole time.
Mm.
So you've got five kicking off. Mm. And I think that's why it spoke to people. Because it is just relationship. And you can see your own life in it, man. You can see you can see couples making mistakes. Like, they could just say, I'm sorry, and it'd be done. And instead, they don't speak to each other all night. And you're like, I've done that so many times.
Yeah, that's the story of my relationships. But is that, and as always, it sort of is a show that has humor by itself, which is good. Because I think, you know, those shows can become a little bit too, you know, they can take themselves too seriously.
It's light.
When you take yourself, because, you know, look at Come Dine With Me.
Yeah.
The best part about Come Dine With Me was the guy taking the piss over there.
Yeah.
Because he's watching people cooking. It's not, you know what I'm saying? It's not life or death. They're a bunch of attractive people in a house fucking. Like, they're like, it's hard for me to go, I feel bad for that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, though? The pathos is hard. And that's why it's interesting as well, because it's interesting about the human condition is, you've got a bunch of people who are normally in their early 20s and have essentially spent their life since age about 16 of being the good looking one.
Mm.
That's what they've been. Mm. Their whole life, they're the good looking one. They've not had to do anything because they're the good looking one.
Mm.
And then you put them into a house and a lot of them become the worst looking one. And that must blow their mind.
Mm.
You know?
Mm. It's hard as that.
It's
a bit light in your mid-20s to try and adapt a personality.
You've got to change your psyche. You've got to transform your psyche.
If
you're there's the girl Laura this year, she had like two guys sack her off. She's like,
oh, is that the one that everyone called her old?
Yeah. She was 29.
Yeah. Brutal. And it was like, you're over the hill. And I was like, how old is this chick? She's like, they're 29. I was like, God damn, that is rough.
But then she's 29, she's beautiful, she's got a good career and stuff. Yeah. She's a 20-year-old boy going, nah, I'm not bothered. Like, she'll spend her life in pubs having 20-year-old boys bother her.
And now
she's got one going, I don't think you're mature enough for me.
And because there's this other plethora of the sort of that.
And what do you do when that's taken away? Like, you're good at talking to people, you're like, I mean, you're a funny guy.
Mm.
You get put in a room with like loads of comedians that you fucking look up to, and they all know each other, and they're being and they're joking, and they're in a clique. And when it happens to me, I'm sort of going, "What am I now in this situation?"
Yeah. Well, you do lose your sort of sense of identity.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially if that's the one thing you're relying upon. Or, I mean, you know, they might have other things going for them as well, but that is
some of them can, like, you know.
But the thing is,
swim.
Yeah. But it's like, it's not even just how much you rely upon it. It's not even what you do with it. It's what other people do with it without you saying.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though? It's like, because a lot of those people, like, there's that one who's beautiful, that the one who, the half-Thai one.
Oh, Kaz.
Yeah. Fire. And she, and you know, and it's like, it's not even what she does with that. It's what comes to it, you know, what comes from that, you know, just from other people and how other people react to it. Well, so that's interesting to see that, man.
That's why it was so interesting, because that Josh guy, so people don't know, on the show, the boys got set in our villa, and Georgia, who was a girl that was with this Josh guy, she decided to stay single. She wanted this Josh back in her life. And Josh got with Kaz, who is just a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And when he came back with her, this Georgia girl was 19.
Mm.
And then not only has she had a guy turn her down, it's on, like, she knows it's televised.
Yeah.
She's been telling everyone she's single. And then for the first time in her life, a guy's gone to her, on looks, there's a better option here than me. And that must be so hard. That's a lesson to be learned at 19.
You forget that, like, you know, they're 19 as well. When you said 19, I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Because that makes me feel old, and I'm young.
Yeah.
And I'm young.
How old are you?
I'm 27.
Oh, yeah.
How old are you?
29.
Yeah, I knew you was older than me when you went, eh. I knew you was older than me when you went, eh, all right, young prick. But how long were they out there for?
2 months, 8 weeks. And if you think about it, some of them will be kept for like a week or so, locked down, no phone. So like, some of them won't have their phone on them for like 9-10 weeks.
Mm.
Even the thought of that, imagine getting broken up with.
Yeah.
And then you just have to... No booze, no social media.
And are you meeting them?
I see the ones that are in the final, but I don't meet them.
You don't meet them before?
Nah, I don't get involved in that.
Yeah.
Well, people always ask me, like, oh, what the...
They don't mean to ask you all the dumb questions that you get asked all the time.
No, but this is an interesting, this, what I'm saying, this is another bit, but something I've not discussed before is like, I don't need to know about them because I only need to know what the audience knows. In fact, I only should know.
Yeah.
Because I used to get sent these profiles, but I have to do jokes of what the audience know. So there's no point me going, oh, and Jessica was a cheerleader when she was 16. And they're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, no one, yeah, I mean, that's not relevant to me. Yeah. I should watch
they
it as
exist
a
plan. In what they exist in that 1 hour.
Yeah, and also, I mean, in my head, the Ian that does the voiceover on Love Island, the thing I've, and it's funny in my head, and I think it's a way of maybe hopefully it'll come from the tone and stuff. I like the idea that the guy in the voiceover booth doing the voiceover is obsessed with these people and thinks they're incredible.
Mm.
But if he met them all 4 hours later in Tesco's, he wouldn't have a fucking clue who they are.
Mm.
Like the minute they walk out that door, he's done. I could meet them all, like all 40 of them lined up, and I'd be like, do you guys need directions? Like, what's going on here?
Move them away, please.
I just wouldn't know them. And I think that's important. I don't care about them before. I don't care about them after. Me as a human being, of course, care about them. I want them to do well. But the voiceover guy couldn't care less.
The voiceover guy is obsessed with the hour.
Yeah.
He's not obsessed with the actual person.
I like the idea. I've been locked in a booth for 23 hours. And finally, I've got some opinions.
And now you're letting...
Put the light on. Let me...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You go over there as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, 8 weeks in Spain, man.
Yeah.
8 weeks.
Damn. How do you like the road? Because I'm a road... I've been on the road now, so I went 2 months with that Channel 4. And when I was doing the Vice thing, I was away for 6 months. You know? So, I'm used to the road now. But it's a weird... Because every different person I talk to reacts to it differently. And I'm comfortable with it.
I find the enjoyment. I think relationships change it. Don't know if you found that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I broke up. Oh, yeah. But it broke up one of my last relationships. Yeah. You got a missus, right?
Yeah, I've got a missus now. Yeah.
Your missus?
No, not yet. I think it's been that long, man.
Oh, my God.
But that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
because
does.
I used to love, like, the before I'd done. Yeah. And even now, I think I am quite nomadic in. By nature, like, even though I've got like a studio apartment in London, like I've got like a house that is a room, and it is
do you live in London?
Yeah. If you were into my house, you'd think I've been robbed. Like, it is a mess. There's loads of stuff, but it's just I've honestly got about 4 suitcases that I've got. I opened a suitcase the other day to come up to Edinburgh, and I was like, that's where that shirt is. Just all my stuff was in the suitcase. Mm. So I think by nature I've never really felt settled. I wouldn't say I've not really had a place that I've lived. You know, I've bounced from flats and stuff, but I wouldn't have, like, I've never put a picture on a wall.
Yeah, no.
I've never put a pen in.
Do you want to hear the strange thing is, like, you saying that is, that sounds like, but it's weird that I find that normal.
Yeah.
That, I go, well, of course, why would you put a picture up? You got to go France next week.
I know, exactly. Honestly, I swear to God, I've never got like a couple of framed photos that I'll put on a flat surface if I'm lucky, but that's it.
Yeah.
One of them comes with me everywhere, like, from family.
Yeah, no, I've never really invested in a home because I'm always away so much.
Yeah, I'm getting December.
Because you're doing a lot of road gigs when you were doing spots, when you're doing the circuit.
Mate, when I
was on the road?
Yeah, before I started touring, I'd gig every night. Like I wouldn't be in the house. Why I wouldn't do it?
Yeah. So your gigs, you're not gigging as much now.
No, I need to. Yeah, I've totally fallen at the habit of it, man. Like I haven't. I've done a gig in like four months. Like a gig.
Ah man, that's rough.
An hour of new material tonight, so that'd be great for the audience.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I won't monkey barrel, but I'll end
what
up
time?
8 o'clock.
Oh, I'm gonna come to that.
I'm just gonna read from my book. I've got, I've got nothing. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. I hate those comedians like I've got nothing, and then they spit.
I'm gonna enjoy that.
And they have fire for 20 minutes.
I'm gonna sit there in the back row and do the proper comic thing of that. Let's see. Nah, I'm playing. You're gonna be fine. Because you, this is another question, because you was doing little tours before the Love Island, right?
Yeah.
How has your audience changed now since doing the Love? That's what I always want to ask you. Like, how has that changed? Because Love Island ain't a comedy show. Because I remember talking to you about this, and I might have made this up, but you were just a voice, and then someone had took a photo of you and put it in the newspaper. And we're like, oh, this is the voice of Love Island, and he's not like a weird, ugly dude. He's actually a young, handsome guy.
What happened was, the end of the third series, they do this like reunion show, and I went and sat on the couch for like 3 minutes to be like, Caroline Flack, who hosts it, was like, give us your best bits. And it's the usual, it's essentially a comedian going on a show and showing three funny clips.
Yeah.
So that was
it.
And like, I put a picture up, got a few selfies with some islanders, they put some stuff up, and like, I went to bed, 12,000 followers on Instagram, something like that. Wow. And I woke up the next morning, I had 80,000.
Wow.
And like,
that's crazy.
This is what the guy looks like. This is what he used to do. This is.
It's crazy how people.
He's won a BAFTA. He's been to he's been to university.
I like how you slipped the BAFTA in there as well.
That's what they meant.
I'm playing with you.
Not my words, the words of the Daily Mail.
Yeah. The Daily Mail.
Oh, yeah.
Great words.
Yeah.
But
I think you should believe everything that they write.
I mean, you know, especially about the BAFTA. But you know, I remember when I was, when I first met you, you were doing the kid show.
Mm-hmm.
I
still do that, you know.
You still do the breakfast, the one where it's like the kid, the dog ate my homework.
Yeah, it's Mock the Week, but we've got kids as the team captains.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You should do it, man, this year.
Do you know what, because you have everyone's comics on
done
it, don't you?
Mate, everyone's done it. I know.
Do you know what? It's just like...
Do you know who was the regular year one? This is really? Honestly true.
Brendan Burns.
Ramesh Ranganathan, right? Oh, no way. We had an argument with BBC Scotland because they were like, we don't want like a grumpy guy on like a kid's TV show. Like, nah, he's great.
Yeah.
And then the week before it started, he done... I hope he doesn't mind me talking about him like this, but I think it'll be fine. He done like... In 1 week, he recorded like live at the Apollo, I think of the JLA showcase, was like a big corporate thing.
Okay.
And Mock the Week or something like that, the same day. And then series one, he went from the series regulars on every episode.
Mm.
By about week three of that, he was like, I can't do all these dates.
Mm.
By the second year, he'd done like two. And on the third year, we moved all of our filming to the morning so he could record it. And he'd only done it because he was supporting Kevin Bridges at the Hydro.
Wow.
And that man's work ethic, that day, he filmed his TV show, then went over to the Hydro, opened for Kevin Bridges. And then that night, I'm like, filmed the kids show in the afternoon. I'm like, brilliant, beers, done. I've worked today.
Yeah.
A few of my Scottish mates phoned me like, Ramesh Ranganathan's at Yes Bar trying out new material.
Yeah.
But this guy's...
Yeah, you don't stop.
Insane.
Well, you think it's like this, you know, it's that work ethic and it's that thing. I don't want to talk for Ramesh. I don't know Ramesh. I'm not going to talk for Ramesh, but I'm just going to talk for certain. The dudes that I know have those ilks. You know what I see a lot of it? Have kids.
Yeah.
And they know, they go, listen, man, they got built. Because I mean, I'm a single dude. I mean, you got a missus, but I'm sure your missus works. But it's like, you know, there's a different work ethic, I think.
Glenn Will said to me, the minute your stand up starts putting food on your table, you get a fuckload better at stand up.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a baby, innit?
Yeah. But then even your own self.
Mm.
Have you?
Because when you first start stand up, it's very selfish, and you don't, you know, and it's that thing that's very selfish, and it's very much, you know, this is me. But then when you realize it's, you know, and you get to a certain level, when you realize that it actually can change the dynamics of your family's lives.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking about, you know, I don't mean putting them up in mansions and stuff. We're talking about realistically.
But that's another
helping
thing.
Helping out with the shopping.
But that's another thing. You know? By its nature, stand-up, I cannot tell you a single person that got into stand-up because they wanted to be famous or because they wanted to make money and who are still doing it. No. And I mean that.
No.
Because after you can, once
and you've seen when you're on the open mics.
Yeah, when you've driven to Hull and eaten shit for 15 minutes and been paid 30 quid, a lot of the people that want to be Ant and Dec fuck off quickly.
Yeah, yeah. What you do, because you realise is that the idea of fame, there's easier ways to get it than navigating it, trying to do stand-up.
Especially nowadays. I think that's why...
I don't think I could start now.
It's important. I don't know how you do anything.
Open mic is a circuit now. And this is for people who listen. Open mic is when you first started doing comedy.
Unpaid comedians, basically. Yeah.
But you're unpaid. And I've got to stop telling my listeners to stop listening if they don't get it. But it's on circuit now, man. It's a totally different world.
Jamal.
So tell me the moment when, so you've woke up, you've got 80,000 followers now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's your initial thought?
That's a good question.
What is that feeling? Where's that feeling of waking up?
Do you know what?
And knowing that you see, even if it, you know, whatever that, but your reality right now has changed. Because that's reality change.
There's that bit inside you, the bit that you don't like to admit exists and does. There is that little bit that you're like, fuck yeah.
Mm. Especially because you're proud of it.
This is great.
Because you really, you know, you like doing that.
Yeah,
but then
there's also a real just prima facie animalistic, look at all these likes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Look at all these numbers on a page.
Because I say Instagram is the most mentally disturbing to people because it sort of, it hits your pleasure synapses. You know what I'm saying? It fills your brain with a certain serotonin.
Yeah.
And those likes sort of become this sort of a currency of acceptance.
The whole social media...
There's that weird thing, you post a photo and if it doesn't get as many likes as you think it gets, and I'm a pretty, you know, anti-social media guy, but even I go, that was with me with
that
the Wu-Tang.
Funny
I think
that's as
worth,
fuck, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's worth a...
Nah, man, social media is set up to be addictive. Likes on social media release dopamine, which makes you feel good. It's just that dopamine is what released when you drink alcohol or smoke fags or gamble. Or do some smack.
Yeah.
It's the exact same drug. And if you look at these apps, I've used the gambling world. Mm. And that's why if you refresh Instagram, it's got that lovely satisfying when you drag it down. The way you press the little red love heart, it sort of goes big. You're like, that feels great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This whole thing is set to keep you in a loop. They want you to be on there for as long as humanly possible because then that's how they make money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the whole thing. And in this, and then the reason there's like an echo chamber and stuff like that within Twitter is because originally it was set up because you want to see your own thoughts and beliefs mirrored back at you. So they'll team you up with people that think and believe in the same stuff.
And then those people are and then agreeing with you.
And then they're liking your shit. You're liking your shit. You're having a great time.
Yeah, though, echo, I mean, because you know what? It goes even more, you know, take it to another level. I remember when I done that Hate Thy Neighbor, I was with all the Nazis. And I was on YouTube looking at research for the Nazi stuff. And it's so mad how, because of that, the cookies that you get and how the stuff gets marketed to you.
Yeah.
So all on my Facebook page, you'd be like, hey, do you want to go see this Nazi do a speak? And he's like, what?
Yeah, you're going on like Amazon. It's like, people who bought this product also bought a burning cross.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Mein Kampf, maybe. And you just go like, it's just mad how you just get, you know what I'm saying? And it's just like that. And it's and then my whole Twitter feed becomes it because it's all of those websites, you know, all linked up. It's just amazing.
But do you know, that's why YouTube comments are so aggressive. Do you know that? Because people will search one. It's not catered to people's tastes. You can get recommended videos, but if you Google Nazi rally, people are Googling it because they think it's fucking stupid or because they're into that shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And those two worlds collide and they wouldn't elsewhere.
Yeah. You get the polar opposites.
Yeah, that's why YouTube
shared space.
Yeah, that's why YouTube comments are so like.
But yeah, but you'd be on like a Disney page and you go down certain far and you'd be like, nigga, you're gonna fucking
I know
fucking Disney.
You can go 8 comments down in any YouTube page, and I reckon some.
Do you read your comments?
Not on YouTube. I'm lucky in that there's not much on YouTube that I'm like think that's the shit right there.
Do you? Yeah, no. I've
do you know what I mean?
My stand-up videos. I think they suck.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah,
I liked your Comedy Central one. I liked your Comedy Store one.
Yeah, but I've done like the whole thing's up there though.
No, but I've seen the bit.
Yeah,
it's a good bit.
I've got a little bit.
Yeah, I like that's the bit.
Fine. It's a good bit. No,
As a comic, I like the bit.
Yeah, but I think I'll put that up, and I've got another one that Rob Delaney's Stand Up Central's coming out, and I like that. But then I've had a lot of new stand up out on telly for a long time.
So yeah, so you've woke up, you see this, you've got 80,000 followers now.
There's a worry to it.
Yeah.
Because then you're like, fuck, people care now.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you've gone into a new...
Red and like...
A new world.
Tabloids care now.
Yeah. Have you been hit with those? Like, have you ever had...
No, nothing. No, I mean, right. I think I'm quite lucky in that I was a children's television presenter that had... Yeah. And a serial monogamous, so yeah. I'm sort
yeah,
of like.
You've always been. I mean, you drink a beer, but that's about it.
I'll have a bit. I'll have a beer, and normally I'll shoot off because, like, yeah. normally I've got.
No, you've never been. You've never been an out guy.
Nah.
And nothing I would say on the podcast. I'm playing
with you. But then also that's funny. But then that's also funny because then you hang out with, because there are some people that be like, "Fuck Ian, don't go out with him because you'll just end up hammered and stay."
No,
out.
No, you'll drink. But I'm not. What I mean is, we're not. You know,
I'm not going to end back in someone's flat at 7 a.m. discussing ideas for an app.
Yeah.
That's what I'm.
We're not calling a guy.
Yeah. I'm calling a guy and his name's Edinburgh Taxi.
Yeah. But no, but yeah, it's, you know, so you got that, so it's 80,000.
And there's that worry. There is that worry, like, finally, fuck, people care. And you start going through your roller index of all the stupid shit you do at university, going, I wonder if any of this.
But, you know, it's just that, it's just a weird thing, isn't it, that, you know, you kind of just got to lean into it, I guess.
What can you do?
Yeah. I mean, I never got that. But even when my first show came out, I was never like, oh my God, because I'll just admit to it.
Yeah,
I do a Charlie.
It's that Jim Jefferies has got that new bit about that girl tried to blackmail him.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, I've got a video of you, a picture of you doing coke. He's like, well, how about you try and get me for something that's like not on brand, like eating at a vegan restaurant or some shit. I'll give you a few quid.
Yeah,
being nice to a kid, something that'll ruin the image.
Yeah, that's not really my fault. But so how has your audience changed though from when you was, because you're doing the tour, little bits of the tour before. How has your audience changed now that you're doing, now it's a Love Island crowd coming? Is that fair to say it's a Love Island crowd coming?
Well, do you know what? One, I genuinely don't know. And two, I don't really know what a Love Island crowd is in terms of, that show's so big now, man. Like, I guess by Love Island crowd, people are... I feel like, and tell me if you're wrong, but in my head, when people ask me that, people are basically saying, are you getting a bunch of, like, 20-year-old girls in fake tan coming to your show?
Do you know what?
Because I don't, or what are you thinking? I sometimes, when some comics ask me, I feel a real snobbery, and it's not even a telly snobbery, I feel like a class snobbery about it.
You think I'm class snobbery?
No, not you at all, obviously, but some comics, when they talk to me, like, oh, do you get a Love Island crowd now? Basically what they're saying is, are you getting a load of working class people that can't behave themselves?
I understand why people would ask that and both would think that. But do you know what I'm saying? I don't think it's necessarily a class snobbery. And I'm very much, I'm very sensitive about people being class snobbery.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not the same class as most of the other comedians.
Yeah.
I'm saying that.
No, like, me neither, man.
Me and you have a kinship in that we're one of the few, you know, there's more coming up now, but there's not a lot of working class.
Yeah, the word estate means a different thing to us than it does to most people.
But, you know, it's when I say Love Island crowd, what I mean is, are you getting people who are coming to you or found your work because of Love Island?
Yeah.
And are you getting 20-year-old girls with fake tan? Because the fact of the matter is, that is a large portion. The same way, you know, if what the perceived image of what people who watch Love Island, you know, I've seen Love Island and I've known other people who watch Love Island, but you see the people who are very vocal about Love Island.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of them are 20-year-old girls with fake tats.
Yeah.
We can't deny that. I'm not shitting on the show.
No, man, no. And also, what the fuck's wrong with those people?
Nothing wrong with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything. No. Don't come to my fucking show. Go to it. Yeah, look at your show. I don't mind them. But no, but you, so do you feel like your audience has changed?
Well, there's more of them. Like when you're doing a gig, I done Exeter on my tour pre Love Island, and three people came to it, you know, and I done Hammers of Apollo last year. So like, there's more people.
There's that mad change, isn't it? There is that weird change where it's like, you know, coming with my last tour, I was doing like, you know, when I did my first tour, I was doing like, you know, 40 people.
I would have loved 40 people on my first tour. I'd have fucking loved it.
Well, what was the average numbers on your first tour?
Well, Scotland, you're at. You're talking like, I'd do the stand and sell it out.
Yeah, because you was like, you're quite big in Scotland.
Glasgow, mate. Glasgow Comedy Festival 3 years ago, They're cutting that shit off at the Glasgow stand.
Really?
I'm talking like...
I thought you was quite big in Scotland. Because you
were... Weirdly not Glasgow. 50 now, but then now, this year Glasgow, I'd done the stand and the garage. So I sold them both out. Yeah. And they're my favourite gigs.
Yeah.
In terms of the people, man, the thing about when you get to the sort of theatre size, because I'm now known, you just get... When you're in a local town, you'll just get people that would come to comedy, like would come to a comedy.
This is a question, in sort of because of Love Island, are you getting people who think you're going to just be talking about Love Island for an hour?
I don't know. Definitely, when I done Edinburgh last year, so I think that last year it was so zeitgeist. It was so top. And the big thing I remember about last year, and again, this has been totally honest, like, I had a Love Island water bottle, like they use in the show, and I thought it'd be quite funny to drink, like, not reference it, but drink from that instead of drinking from a bottle, like a bottle. Yeah, like a little fucking nod.
Why not? It'd be funny.
And I put it on this stool because I love that pool of light thing. You know that for comedians love that. The mic and a pool of light. But I had all I'd done for a joke. Stool, Love Island water bottle, pool of light. And people were coming in and getting selfies with it as they walked in the door. A water bottle.
See,
and that's when I started going, fuck, people like Love Island.
Is that why you get really, and I say defensive, but not in like a bad way. I'm not saying you're getting uncomfortable with it, but I'm saying, do you get really sort of defensive about your crowd without, when other comics, you know, ask you about it? And I'm not talking about me, because I know, because you know, I didn't take any offense by your answer. I know you wasn't talking about me directly, but do you get like defensive about it because you know that A, they're good people, and you know, and all that stuff, and then B, because I mean, they have afforded you to sell out Hammersmith Apollo, and you kind of to then turn around and degrade these people who have paid good working money.
Yeah.
And they put you in, a position where you do it. Because I mean, for a comedian, Hammersmith Apollo is the fucking...
That's it, man. That's the shit.
That's it.
I've not done live at the Apollo, the TV show. I've just done the fucking venue.
But do you know what I'm saying though? Is that why you get really sort of like, you sort of defend those
people? Do you know what? It's something I've never...
People can poo-poo them.
One of the reasons I talk about it a lot with you is because it's the sort of thing I don't really get to talk about when I get interviewed. It'll be like, who's your favourite person on Love Island and stuff like that. When I get asked a question like this, I'm actually just quite excited to talk about it. So that's one of the reasons. I think too, I genuinely don't notice an issue. To give an example, I've had two gigs on the tour last year where people were rude and had to be asked to leave.
Yeah.
Where and was both that? Times, Henley upon Thames.
Oh, Henley, them motherfuckers in Henley, boy. You got to watch out for them.
They were both...
You got to watch out for them Henley people.
They were both middle-aged ladies.
And you know what?
Always the rude, always the rude, always the rudest.
Yeah.
Always the rudest.
The thing about a middle-aged white woman, she just does not give a fuck, fam. And she will ruin...
With a bottle of wine in her, and then it's that...
this lady right here, she came and ruined the podcast.
But then I think it's like, I don't know if it is. Again, it's the idea of like, I think it's the idea of privilege. Like, there's a lady sitting down in the front talking. When I told them to be quiet, they were sort of like...
How dare
you? Paying, I'm here, I'm doing what I want to do. Like, I don't care about the 500 people that are behind me.
It's ridiculous.
So it's always, they're always the troublemakers. Yeah. I've never had a young Love Island person cause me problems in my gig, ever. Ever.
You know what, man? Because they are just young people, I guess.
And again,
to call it a Love Island person is a bit of an oxymoron, because it's a show that majority of young people watch. So
but again, maybe it's me projecting, because you're saying, are there Love Island people coming? I mean, the answer is, people who like Love Island, yes. Yeah. Because my tour sales went from 3 to 2,500 in the space of 2 years. And unless they're huge fans of ITV2's Fake Reaction, then they've not...
Which what may say is a good show.
It's a great show. I love that show.
Show.
I love that show, but
I can't diss any other show when I've done 11-ish.
What I'm saying is, that's the only other thing I've done apart from Love Island. So they're all Love Island people. And the point maybe it's because we're at the Edinburgh Festival and it drives comedians even more insane than they normally are and even more in their own heads. I do feel like when I get asked the question of like, and I genuinely am talking about you, because I genuinely am. But sometimes when comedians go like, what are the gigs like now? You do have this thing going, oh, I'm at, well,
they're animals. Yeah. I bet they're animals. The other thing as well is you've got to remember you've
put them in a cage. Like you've got to do a gig. You've got to have chicken wire in front of you.
I've got to throw the Love Island water bottle in it and run. But the bottom line is they're fucking nice people.
And you know, though, I think people can get this perception of, like, you know, everybody. And you know what? It's like this. Everybody kind of, and it's not dissing the guy, because I hope he does my podcast. But people, when they start comedy, they were like, well, I want like a Daniel Kitson, Stuart Lee type crowd.
Mm.
And you know what, man? They are the ones who are some of the most biggest fucking assholes. Not the comics. The comics are some of the best comics in the world.
Yeah.
But the audiences. Because you don't, like, I don't want people too pretentious to laugh. And I think there is that sort of idea that you get, you know, people and you go, oh, no, they don't get comedy. What do you mean? They don't get what makes them laugh?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though? And I think there is that sort of, it can be easily to, as a comedian, you go, well, I'm doing art. And you go, no, you're telling a couple of cunt jokes. Shut up and tell it to the people who want to buy the ticket.
Yeah, and also the other thing you've got to remember, and this is an absolute fact, if you are doing a theatre that doesn't immediately sell out because you sent out a mailing list...
Mm.
Then you are gonna get people that know if you're well enough known name that you can do a theatre. Mm. You're gonna get people that read the theatre program and come to a fucking thing on a Thursday.
Mm.
They're always gonna come. I don't care if
you know what my funniest gigs are is when I do up north and I do Manchester, Liverpool, and I just get normal people coming out. Do you know what my worst shows are?
Yeah,
Hipsterville.
Yeah.
When I get a hipster come in, because they don't laugh, they sit there and they rub their chin and they go, oh, no, you did there with the clever, yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's the issue. So it's, no, I do appreciate it. I think people.
Best shows I ever do at Edinburgh Fringe Festival are the ones that are comfortably sold.
Yeah.
And then on the day they tip to sold out.
Yeah.
Because you've got people that are fucking into it, know what you're about. Mm. And then hopefully, let's say, argument's sake, 20, 30 people that go, fuck it, I'll give it a punt.
Yeah.
And then the people that are on board from the beginning drag them and you have a great gig. Mm. Toughest gigs are the Saturdays that sold out 5 months earlier because these people are like, this is going to be the best thing I've ever seen.
And
they love festival and they've planned it and the whole day's planned around it. They've probably seen about 4 or 5 shows that day and then they come to you and they're like, right, come on. This is the dream. 5 months I've been waiting. Let's do this. And it's never... I'm no one's 5 months funny. No one's a 5 month wait funny.
Ah, you're funny, dude. I like your stuff.
It's good.
I like it.
But that's what I'm saying. I think that's the best good way stuff. To be. You for an audience, for a comedy audience to work, I think you need to have... Tim Key always said, once you get to over 50%, then you can tip over to doing what you like, because then the 50% will bring the other 50 with them. And I love the idea of having, like, say, 60% people that are there because they know what it's all about, and 40% are like, I've seen this guy on a thing, so, or this guy sort of does that thing, and then you can bring them with you.
I like 70% liking me, and I like the other 30% horrified. And they don't understand why the other 70% like me. That's like my favourite crowd.
And then you get to shout at them.
Yes, I get to shout at those people and everyone else goes on board. So like, yeah, this guy's great. And everyone's like, I just, you know.
How have you found audiences in America compared to here?
Well, I haven't started my tour over there yet.
Have you done gigs over there?
Yes, though? I've done. Yes, I have. But they were non-paid.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're all non-paid. But I have done sets over there because I had IVs or something out there. But yeah, do you know what, man? Difficult, bruv.
Yeah.
Difficult. Because I remember I said to my agent, I said, I got the agent out there now, and they were like, oh, we'll put you in the alt clubs. And I'm like, well, I'm a comic. God, just put me in the clubs. And no, the alt clubs are normal clubs.
Yeah.
And the clubs are beasts.
What's an American club like? What's an alt club? Like an alt club, the cellar, is that an alt club?
I don't know if that's an alt club. I didn't do the cellar. But I'll say an alt club is like UCB, The Stand, type of stuff. And that's just like Top Secret.
Yeah, that is.
But we wouldn't call Top Secret an alternative club. We would call it a comedy club.
Yeah.
And then some of their clubs are like, you know, old school Portsmouth Jonglers on crack. And then you go, and you know what I'm saying? And it's like all touristy and stuff. And it's like, do you know what? It's mad. It's like, do you know what? I didn't realize it would be so hard is for me to have this accent but this face. Because when I go up there,
Can they not get their accent?
They go, I don't. And because I've saw a lot of comedians go up there saying, we have black people in Britain. And I always go, like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm British. Get over it. Yeah. And I go up there and they're just like, why do you have this face?
and with that accent. I remember I was there and they were like, a guy away from England, Jamali. And I was there with, you know, my agent, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris, who is looks quintessentially English, had like walked in front of me. So they all thought it was him. Then I walked on and they were just like, what? The fuck is this guy? But yeah, but I'm doing some tours out there. And do you know what, man? Like, I'm looking forward to it, man. I think shows will be good. Like, I'm sort of doing that thing of, it's like, you know, I'm not doing massive places, but it's people coming because they know me from the show. So,
shift any tickets in America, yeah, from the UK, that's so good.
Yeah, no, I'm so, yeah, I've had to add a couple of extra shows, which is good.
Boom.
Yeah, I've got two extra shows. So, yeah, man, I can't complain, bruv, you know.
I'd like to come on your podcast so you can plug your shit.
I mean, yeah. Thank you. Well, you asked me, man. Fuck yeah.
I'm joking.
Jamali.
Tell me about this book. I want to know about this book.
Well, it's not what we're talking about.
I want to know about the book.
It's about millennials.
Okay.
Our generation.
So tell me, what's the process of writing a book?
For me, I had this idea of talking about, like, I feel like I'm fucking...
Because,
like,
they came to you with the deal and said, do you want to write a book? And then you have to decide what you want to write. You didn't want to do a biography.
Well, the proper ins and outs of it was, like, we went to, like, a load of publishers.
Okay.
And, like, you'd walk into one and they'd be like, we've got a great idea. It's like the voice of Love Island, so you can, like, go, like, around the world doing dates. And I'm, like, out the door by the time they finish the sentence, you know?
Because you don't, I mean, even though you like doing that show, you don't want to do a show.
If you write a book, man, I love books, man. Mm. Like, if I write a book, I don't want it to be, like, a cash-in, like, wacky pictures where someone reads while they're having a runny dump. Like, do you know what I mean? I want a fucking to do a book. So, I went and had this idea for ages about, like, because basically, and it genuinely bothers me, like, I feel like I can't get my shit together. I'm so disorganized. And, like, I've relied on, like, my parents are so amazing, my mum and dad. Like, beyond amazing.
They must be proud of what you're doing.
Yeah, man. Yeah. My mum and dad would lie down in traffic for me now if I text them. Like, do you know what I mean?
I like that situation needs to be done, but you've got time to text.
I wouldn't even have to, do you know what I mean? I wouldn't have to have some face to face.
That's a lot of power to have, because I think my mum loves me, but she ain't lying down in no goddamn traffic over no text.
Oh, honestly, I could, like, smoke signals and she'd be like, I think he maybe means that, I'll do it just to be safe.
You might be hungry, comes with a bucket of chicken just in case.
Honestly, it's insane.
That's lovely.
But then I think I relied on that so much, and then I got into this telly thing very quickly and had, like, an agent very quickly. So, like, my shit gets done for me, and I couldn't. I just feel like I'm useless, and especially when you sort of, like, get a bit old and, like, I've got a girlfriend and I'm like, I am hopeless. Mm. Like, she is doing...
But the thing is, like, I don't know if you face this, but my thing is this, is I can do very... Like, I could write a... You know, I can write something, or I can do this, or I could be creative. But the idea of going to the bank and getting a letter horrifies me.
No.
And I can't do it. Like, I generally won't do it. I've put off stuff for months. Like, I've still got a student bank account. But, and I haven't,
so do I.
I haven't been university.
So do I.
Because I can't
be bothered.
It's just the idea of that minutia is horrifying.
I had, when I stopped smoking, I had, like, minging bottom teeth for about 8 months. Like, 8 months from, like, day one, not in a cruel way, but my girlfriend would be like, you don't smoke anymore, you can get that shit polished off. And I was like, ah. Look, I don't fucking know. I'll do it.
Yeah.
And eventually she, like, was like, look, just phone the people up. I'm like, this isn't going to work. Like, this is too difficult.
I can't do
I'm
that.
I'm only free like an hour tomorrow. This is going to hide. Can I get a thing? Yeah, for tomorrow at this time. Yeah, cool. Wicked. Right, okay. Maybe it was easier than I thought.
Yeah. It's mad though. It's just that, but I think that's a comic thing. That we just can't.
But I was
that.
Wondering why, but is it? I think it's maybe generational. That's what I talk about in the book.
Because
I was brought up, and I think it's fairly universal. I was brought up, my mum and dad, but however you were brought up, like, guardian, single parent, whatever, but your mum and dad, whoever, would be like, you're incredible. You're special. You see all those other kids, they're not as good, they're like you, but you're...
you're different.
You can achieve anything you want to achieve. Like, do you know what I mean? Regardless of effort or talent, you're going to do it. 5 foot. Play basketball, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then, like, we brought that in school from back in the day to now is insane. Like, they used to have a cane, they used to beat the shit out of kids.
Yeah.
And now you get a gold sticker for showing up.
Yeah.
You come out, sports day, everyone gets a fucking medal.
Do you not agree with that stuff?
No. You get a certificate for attendance, bronze attendance certificate for 80% attendance or higher. If you go to work and attend 80%, you're getting sacked for not showing up to work.
That's funny. It's true.
And people and parents are pinning it on the wall. Kids are like, I'm fucking great showing up to stuff. Mm. I'm so good. And then the credit crunch happened. And then all that, oh, you can achieve anything, became what? And everyone started going over our generation, like, why do you guys expect so much? Mm. Get an office job. Like, everyone, you fucking told me. Mm. You told me I was going to be an astronaut, and now you're annoyed that I don't want a fucking gig in standard life. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? Mm. And then you've got that, and then work comes in, and work's fucked. Like, the whole way companies have been set up, like the 80s, I think it was like the first time that the people started using redundancies and stuff to balance the books. Mm. The workforce just became another bit of the balance sheet. So people are getting sacked off and chucked around, and profits before the people. And as a millennial, it's been told you're special all your life. When you mean less to a business than its profit margins, that's going to affect your ego a little bit, you know? Mm. And then you put the social media over the top of it, where you've got this whole world of it, everything's instant. You can click a button, boom, you've got a pizza. Like, it's fucking incredible. Mm. And then they get told, yeah, you'll have a good job if you stay here for 4 years. You're like, fuck that, I want the good job now. Mm. And I feel that in me, man. Like, when I first started stand-up, I'm so much more level-headed now, but I got signed by a company called Avalon. They're pretty big. Within six months, I was like, why am I not on fucking Live at the Apollo? This is bullshit. I wasn't on Live at the Apollo because I was shit at comedy. I was fucking terrible at it. Mm. But I was like, but Mum says it's good, and I'm with a big management, and I'm precious. Mm. I'm so special. I've got a story to tell. And you don't, and it's important to learn that, like, you fucking... No, people don't give a shit what you think, and that is fine. And I'm saying that on a podcast that people are going to listen to.
No, but it's true.
People don't give a fuck what you think. Mm. And it's really, that is so important to learn. And you're not important, and that's fine. Mm. And I've learned that a little bit doing this book. Mm. And I hope it's helped. So that's
what's the format of the book, is it?
Each chapter is just a different thing affecting millennials. You've got childhood.
Okay.
Two chapters on social media, because it's a big one, isn't it?
Is it humorous?
Yeah, and then well, what I've done is I put a funny I put a funny story. I think about half of them from a stand-up, half of them aren't. A funny story in each chapter.
But you sound like you definitely got a good point of thesis going on. And that's interesting. That's really cool, man. When are you releasing it?
It's literally out. In shops now.
Great. You enjoying it? You happy it's out?
Yeah. It's got too many typos, which fucked me off.
Yeah, fucking...
So annoying. But apart from that, when I say so many, like a handful, yeah, but that annoys you. Though, it? Yeah, I mean, this is such
You're an orphan now?
I'm an offer.
Fucking hell.
It's so cool. I could go into a shop and I could go Waterstones now and buy my book.
What a weird change, man, from fucking being, doing panel show run-throughs for shows that didn't exist.
I know.
Today you're awful, man. I'm fucking proud of you, brother.
Thanks, bro.
That's good, man.
You're doing great too, man.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Trying to pay bills, man. You know, that's the thing. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's people who go, oh, you're doing great. You go, man, I'm still trying to pay bills. You know what I'm saying?
You're doing, nah, man. You're a cut above the bills.
No, mate. I'm still tax man on my ass, man. That's all it is.
Stop earning as much money. It'll
be yeah. Try and get that 40%. No, I'll wrap it up, man. I think I've took nothing in time. But Ian, man, thank you, man.
Cheers, man.
And it's always nice to see you, man. And it's too long.
It's been too long. Let's do beers. We've got a week left of the festival.
Yeah, let's do some beers.
I'll get you a copy of my book.
That, bro, that'd be great. I was going to ask you off camera and was like, yeah.
Not ready to adult yet.
Eh?
Like Ian Sterling.
Yeah, but what?
Going to get a copy.
I'm going to get a copy. And we'll tweet it. That's... No, and the rest of you guys don't get a copy. I get a copy. You've got to buy yours from Waterstones. But go buy that book. And go support my brother Ian Sterling, man. And I'm proud of you. And I hope you achieve everything you want to achieve, man. And yeah, man, it's always good spending time with you, man. So that was just Ian Sterling. It was nice catching up with him. I ain't seen Ian for a long time. That's the problem with comedy, man. You don't really get to see people as much as you like to see them. But it's always nice seeing Ian, man. Always leave with a smile on my face. But next week, I got my other friend. A lot of this podcast is just my friends. That's cool with me, though. Getting paid just to chat to my mates. And we got Grace Neutral, who's a lovely person. Such a good person, makes you feel like a shit person. Because you're not as nice as she is, but no, she's a lovely person. And so we got Grace Neutral.
Jamali 9.
Jamali.
Jamali 9000 from Mars. Just land over Max with the computer. My wings expand on Earth, around the universe.
The superhero just written a verse. The J on my shirt, but Jamali, never using a Molly. Walking down the galaxy, computers on my hand. Built in like I'm a man machine since I was growing up with children. Mechanical rapper, putting a robot flow together. I made a steal in any weather. Disguised more than Spider-Man in a sweater. Optimus way after prime. Standing on top of the world, I gotta shine. Just like my pop's new Cadillac CT6. The patch on my eye, I be Rick. The lyrics are slick, like new now wave grease.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.